Hey everybody, this is the WWE Podcast, ready to review Monday Night Raw that aired last night on September 7th, 2020, where we got to finally hear from Retribution and exactly what their mission statement is. The Mysterio family gets revenge on Murphy, Drew McIntyre repays Randy Orton with three Claymore kicks, and I'm issuing an official rant warning for this show. Let's get it all started right after this. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out. It's right at the top and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. And it is time to review Monday Night Raw that happened last night from the Amway Center in Orlando. Nice to not say Performance Center, isn't it? So much nicer to not have to say Performance Center. And it's the same city, just a different venue, but it is nice to see a real arena again. And the fans aren't truly there. And they've been there for a few weeks now, but it does make a real difference in the production of the show and the presentation. So that's a positive. The Thunderdome I'm getting used to. I'm not as distracted as I once was when it first began, where I'm like staring at the individual tiles to see what people are doing. And it's kind of like they've faded into the background now, which I'm sure WWE was the hope was for the production value, is that you don't get distracted by the people and they don't do things that are inappropriate, of which has already happened. But that's kind of the risk you run with hundreds and hundreds of live feeds from fans that you never know what they're going to do. So I've got a lot I want to get to with Monday Night Raw. I was taking notes during the show on my phone as I was watching it on my phone. And it infuriated me at some points and made me semi-satisfied in others. It was a show that I think a lot of the writers didn't think long-term with this show. And I'm not sure what the thinking was with Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. I'll get to that in a minute. The inexplicable just stoppage of the match between Nia Jax and the Riot Squad in the 2-on-1 handicap match, why that was just stopped, never just picked up. I mean, it just stopped because Retribution decided they wanted to say something and are apparently allowed to not only interrupt and play with the lighting and have full access to any power grid that WWE has, but they now have their own logo that they have forced the production team to put on the screens, and apparently have held the production team hostage and also forced them to air a promo. So are we just past the stage where security is going to be, not letting them in? Or can we just get past that, please? Can we just move on from the whole idea that Retribution is this outside group that WWE is trying to prevent them from getting into the building? Because they've successfully got in 10 out of 10 times. I mean, it's laughable at this point. Can we just drop that part of the thing and just label them as a rebel group instead of this outside force that's not supposed to be there? Because how often and how many times can you put them on your show if they're not really supposed to be on your show? and you're telling us they're not supposed to be on your show, but they're on it anyway, and have us believe that they're this group that, you know, again, somehow gets TV time every week, but security is, you know, again, security is supposed to not let them in. They're, you know, they're all four security guards that Adam Pearce has at every entrance, apparently, of the Amway Center. If they couldn't, let me just say this. If WWE could not handle the Performance Center security, very unlikely they're going to be able to handle the scale of the Amway Center in terms of security. So, all right. Well, I kind of gave you, at the very beginning of the show, I gave you a bit of a heads up. There's going to be some rants happening here. I don't try to get clicks for this. Again, many of you who listen to me or have listened to me for a long time know that I rant when I feel it's necessary. When I feel that it's something that is wrong. Something that, a product that I love, when I see a very big misstep, miscue, I feel passionate about it. I know that a rant is coming on it. It's not produced. I have no notes on it other than just the topic. So I want people to know that if you're new or you've never really gone through the motions with me on this or heard me rant, it's not produced. It's just something that when I sit and watch a show and I see something, it makes me go, I can't wait to get on the mic. I can't wait to get onto the show to be able to tell people what I think about it. And it's not, again, not clickbait. You know, you didn't see in my title rant or anything, right? The name of the show has nothing to do with rants. But I'm just giving you a warning. If you don't like rants, whatever, then, you know, I would tune out. But I don't cuss to the best of my ability. I really don't. This is a PG show. There are a few shows floating out there that I've done that are not PG, but they're very, very, very few and far between and they're labeled explicit. So, this one will not be that, but I do have some very, you know, some things that I'm like, what the hell with WWE? We're going to get to that too. But welcome, guys. Welcome to the show as we roll into the Raw review portion of things. And we're back on a normal schedule. So tomorrow will be your Wrestling Nostalgia. Thursday, Friday, AEW, right? And then also Friday is WWE Rivalries with Anthony DeMarco, your co-host here, hosting his own show, doing Wrestling Rivalries, WWE Rivalries. On Friday, SmackDown is, of course, your SmackDown review. And then Sunday, back with the co-host and reviewing the week. So things are rolling here on the show. And big thank you to everybody who is continuing to support the show. It's much appreciated. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts if you have a moment. That's all I ask. Okay, before I get to the rant or whatever I'm going to do, I want to give you guys a little bit of positive. The things I did like about Raw, because overall I felt very angered by the show, and I have several notes on that, but I want to balance it, and I want to give you some things I like. I actually did like Cedric Alexander joining the Hurt Business. I like it because it gives Cedric Alexander relevancy. He was being lost in the sauce with Apollo Crews and Ricochet. Just, I mean, people forgot about him. I did. And I saw him on a weekly basis, and you're like, oh yeah, Cedric Alexander. He's just kind of there. He's like the wallpaper, right? He's just there. You sometimes see it, but you don't really think about it. That's what wallpaper is, and that's what Cedric Alexander is. Up until this past week, he joined the Hurt Business and gave a really good reason why he joined the Hurt Business with MVP, Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin, that he was tired of being on the receiving end of beatings, and he wants to make money, and that he feels like he was just kind of being overlooked, and that he was fighting for other people's championship opportunities. Very true. Very true. He kind of just took control of his career. How can you fault the guy? So joining the Hurt Business, I like Cedric Alexander joining the Hurt Business as that group continues to be more formidable and more formidable by the week. So I expect that to continue as the Hurt Business picks up steam, picks up members. I can't remember the last time we've had a 4-person team. I don't even know, right? Like an actual legitimate 4-person team that has credentials and has the potential to be a big deal. And I hope the Hurt Business has big plans, or WWE has big plan for them, and they're not just kind of like sticking all the African-American wrestlers together for a common cause and then just doing nothing with them. WWE has had a tendency to stick people of an ethnicity together or race together. And I mean, I'm not getting into political or anything like that, of course, but I just hope that they present them in a respectable way. and that they're not just a flash in the pan. And let's stick them together, you know, because they're all the same race, and let's hope it sticks. I don't think that'll be the case. I will give WWE some good faith here. I think that they will be able to present them well because MVP is so damn good at talking. MVP is the heart and soul of the Hurt Business. MVP right now, without him, this group doesn't exist. They would just be three kind of mediocre promo African-American performers. That's what they would be. That Vince McMahon stuck together and you go, Vince stuck them together because they're all black. Right? Like, that's what you probably think. And I think this is going to be a bigger deal. MVP is such an integral part of this. Such a big piece of it. So I'm looking forward to see what they can do. And having a new member join of Cedric Alexander instantly makes him more relevant in a moment than almost his entire career in WWE. So good for him taking control of his career and joining a big league team. We'll have to see where things go. Again, I hope it's long term. I hope it is. Something else I did like was actually Drew McIntyre, but only part of it. And here's the part I liked. The part I liked was Drew McIntyre doing tit for tat on Randy Orton, coming back after a 2-week absence. Well, really a 1-week absence because he only took last week off, but it's been 2 weeks since we've seen him. And strategically throughout the night, doing exactly what Randy did to him, but with the claymore instead of the punt kick. I like that. I also like that Keith Lee didn't take a loss from Randy Orton, although it would have been, to me, warranted. Take a clean loss from Orton, nothing, no shame in that, right? I'm glad that, though, they didn't just decide to, oh, well, Keith Lee's got a victory over Orton, let's see if he can make it 2-0, you know, make an even bigger statement by having him beat him again or something like that. No, Randy Orton had that match won, and that's when Drew McIntyre delivered the first claymore. And Keith Lee just seems to have a habit of anytime he gets RKO'd, rolling out of the ring. It happened last week in the triple threat. It happened this week in the one-on-one. I hope that Keith Lee and Randy Orton separate themselves for a while, though. I'm not keen on seeing Keith Lee at this level so quickly. We all know he's capable of it, but for those that don't know or haven't seen him before, they're probably like, why is he immediately shooting himself to the top? Like, why is he doing that? Why is he instantly getting to work with one of the greatest of all time and the hottest, one of the hottest heels in the company? And to which I would say, who knows? I mean, it's just WWE trying to make a good impression on fans and send the message to fans that this guy's going to be a big-time money player. And that's fine. I understand the message, but I think we've got it. Like, okay, message received. Let's move on, Keith Lee, to another opponent. I'm not saying in the undercard. I'm saying, like, United States Championship level, right? That's where I think he should be living right now and work his way up to the main event to win the championship, right? That's just my thinking. I know some of you are like, but Keith Lee, I've been watching him. He deserves. Yeah, but that's you. That's to people who have been watching him religiously in NXT, know his backstory. But for those that watch Raw and SmackDown, most people watch just Raw and SmackDown and either glance at NXT, maybe read about it, but most don't watch all three all the time. They just don't. Look at the ratings. I mean, it's double for Raw and SmackDown that it is in NXT. So the ratings and numbers bear it out. So if you're going to present this new character to fans that have never seen him or have maybe seen him or have kind of seen him, you need to make a big impact. That's what they're doing, and I get it. But this big impact has to kind of wean off, and you need to position him in a way that he can live in a certain place for a while. He doesn't need to shoot to the top right now. Don't do Roman Reigns. For God's sakes, please. That's what I'm afraid of with Keith Lee. But, well, I mean, again, he's not in title pictures yet, but I would like to see him in a program that's actually going to go somewhere. Anyway, so I liked Drew McIntyre's tit for tat. I liked the psychology behind that. And I was concerned. I even wrote a note that his first claymore, that's all he did. And I wrote down, I was like, what? After everything Randy Orton's done, one move is okay. One move is justice. And I'm like, what? That's all he's going to do? And he just kind of stands there and he's like, oh, you know, came. I think Michael Cole said he came what he did what he wanted to do, and now he's leaving. Or something along those lines. I'm like, that's all he wants to do, though? I mean, I don't know. I was very angry the fact at first that he only delivered one kick and he was actually going to get out of the building. So bravo to WWE for the psychology there, the three kicks for the three kicks. I like it. So, I mean, honestly, that may be where things start to move downhill for me here. And actually, let me start with something neutral, because this has never been explained to me, so I'm not going to go right to the bottom here. Adam Pearce. Where the hell did this guy come from? What? Most people don't even know who he is until he just took control of several situations backstage a number of weeks ago. I remember he was at the forefront of Daniel Bryan and... was it Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles who were in the SmackDown Intercontinental Championship tournament, and they were talking about how that one of them, AJ's going to take a bye and Bryan's not. And I think Adam Pearce was the one who decided that that Bryan could do it if he wanted, but he chose not to, and that AJ Styles could indeed take a bye if he wanted. I believe that's the first time I saw Adam Pearce on a weekly basis, the number of months ago. And ever since then, he's appeared in like the Fiend segments. He's just loves ambulances. I mean, how many ambulance rides have we seen in WWE over the last, my God, month? How many people have taken ambulance rides from Big E to the Fiend? Did Braun Strowman take one? And then we had... this past week with Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre. So people just, they should just have an ambulance at the ready. And they seem to in the arena. It's just crazy the amount of ambulance rides they've done. And so that's kind of where my, again, Adam Pearce, what is he? Is he the de facto GM? He's kind of running things backstage, but why? It's like they've thrown a GM in there without us knowing or kind of under our noses, like, oh, okay, he's in charge because he's an official. They call him an official. So he's management and running things. Well, I don't know. It's like they've sneakily put back a general manager on Raw. And I don't hate it. I don't know how to feel about it, which is why I'm saying it's neutral. I'm not down on it. I'm not up on it. I'm just kind of like, And they're trying to, I guess, fill in some of the holes for the stories of how things come together by having kind of an unofficial general manager of the show. Adam Pearce is, I don't know what his role is going to be long term. I don't. But I guess in some instances you need management there to fill in gaps or to make things work for the next step of the story. So, fine. I mean, Adam Pearce was trying to kick out Drew McIntyre all night. Fine, I guess. I mean, he kicks out Drew McIntyre, but then lets in Retribution. Like, what? Like, I don't understand this. How does he let Drew McIntyre, the Retribution, in on a weekly basis? Not only let them in, but attacks fans, and I say fans very lightly, attack the non-workers, non-performers, non-wrestlers, on a weekly basis, screw with the lighting, screw the production team, have a lackluster, and that's being generous for an adjective, group of security guards, and worry about Drew McIntyre. And, you know, chasing him around all night. And saying, you gotta get out of here. You're a liability. You gotta get out of here. So, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about Adam Pearce right now. They just kind of put him there to, I think, fill in storyline holes and that kind of thing. So, outside of that, as we continue our descent down here, and maybe we'll make our way back up, I'm sure something else will pop up, but right now we're on the descent of the roller coaster. And Drew McIntyre coming in an ambulance. What? Why? Is it to show that he commandeered the ambulance like a badass? What did he do? Just, was he driving around in it for 2 weeks? And he stole the vehicle and then he drove into the arena with it? How did he get that ambulance? Was it? I mean, I'm not understanding. Like, why is that ambulance a thing? I don't know why WWE, like, ever since Stone Cold did it, and it made sense for Stone Cold to do it, and he did it on a couple of occasions. I remember Becky Lynch did it. made no sense. Becky Lynch then drove her own Mack truck into the arena for I don't know how many weeks with her face plastered on it, which I thought was really detrimental to her character, which was just how arrogant her character became. And which is why I think her pregnancy couldn't have come at a better time unless they were planning on turning her heel. So we have Drew McIntyre do the same thing, except he was 2 weeks late. He commandeered the ambulance. Was there an ambulance there? Was he just going up to the EMT saying, "Hey, listen, I want to do something cool. Can I just drive this, like, you know, 12 feet into the arena?" "Yeah, man, sure. Go ahead. I mean, how did that happen? There was no reason for that. I know what they were trying to go for. That's a cool, badass thing to do. Well, why? Okay. You guys get my point. So he did that, which I wasn't a big fan of. And if... Here's the other thing. This is the... here I go. WWE officials and Drew McIntyre himself and Randy Orton himself have said that Drew McIntyre suffered from a fractured jaw from Randy Orton. Now, when you guys look at those three kicks, which they've replayed over and over and over, that Randy Orton delivered to Drew McIntyre 2 weeks ago on Raw, would fractured jaw be the first thing that comes to your mind? No, that's not mine. That's not the way my head works. You know, when I see somebody get literally kicked in the head, I understand. I'm living in kayfabe land, folks. I'm not living in that he actually kicked him in the head. But if that were to actually happen and it was truly a kick to the head like that, do you think a fractured jaw would be the first thing that you'd be concerned about or was the most likely injury? No. I think that they are staying away from the C word. And no, it's not the C word that we're all thinking. It is the word concussion. I think that with all of the bad press around concussions lately in the NFL and other pro sports, that playing off of a serious injury like a concussion would be in bad taste. That's the only thing I could think of. Because if Drew McIntyre truly had a fractured jaw, number one, a lot of times they wire your jaw shut. Not all the time, but that's one of the treatments. And if he had a fractured jaw, he shouldn't be talking normally, talking normally and doing everything he does, not looking any different. There's not a whole lot you can do for a fractured jaw. I understand that. But it just seems kind of like they're avoiding saying the word concussion. Why are they not saying the word concussion? Because that is the most likely injury from someone kicking you in the skull. That's what Randy's been doing. He hasn't been kicking people in the face. There's a difference. I know I'm nitpicking here, but am I the only one that's like, what the hell are you talking about, a fractured jaw? Is it possible? Yeah. But it's not nearly at the top of the list. Why are they... Drew McIntyre should have suffered a concussion. Concussion. Say it. Say it with me, folks. That's what it should have been. But they're focusing on his jaw for whatever reason. Makes no sense. Because how are you supposed to play that out, that Randy Orton is going to target the jaw of Drew McIntyre at the Clash of Champions Gold Rush pay-per-view? I don't know. I just don't get it. It just doesn't make sense to me. But fine, we'll go with the at least they got the part of the anatomy correct. It's on the head. If they were to say he suffered a serious shoulder injury from 3 punts to the skull, I mean, that would have been insanely stupid. But fine, I'll go with it. I just don't know how they're not even addressing the concussion part. Makes zero sense.
You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, so let's talk a little about something that I like again. And again, I'm trying to keep things a little balanced. One thing I actually did like, and many people are kind of putting this one down, is the Mysterio family. Mysterio family that just continues to grow in its number of members and on-air presence every week, with not just Rey Mysterio and Dominic, but also Rey Mysterio's wife, Dominic's wife. I get it. I understand it's a family beatdown this week as Dominic faces Murphy in a street fight. And look, do I like that Dominic is able to just basically go toe-to-toe with anybody right now in WWE, go toe-to-toe with Seth Rollins, beat Murphy, beat Seth Rollins last week? That part of it does not really sit well with me, that Dominic, who's a complete newbie to the WWE main roster, he maybe have trained, and that's great, and obviously he's done it. He's a lot better than I thought he would be, I'll tell you that, and props to Dominic. It's nothing against Dominic as a performer, as a wrestler, but to have him come in and immediately be able to go toe-to-toe with one of the greatest in WWE right now, like Seth Rollins, is an insult to my intelligence. I'm not saying Dominic's not going to be a great wrestler, that he's not going to, you know, possibly main event one day. I'm not saying that. Number one, he's got to work on his promo skills. Not easy. Not saying it's easy at all, but they're kind of bland right now. He's just kind of very robotic. I don't know. It's like he needs a software update or something. I don't know. Dominic is he's a good in-ring performer. I think exceeds most people's expectations, but I just don't like the idea that he can just pop in and compete and go toe-to-toe and take everyone to the limit. I just despise that phrase. However, my positive in this is that Murphy got what he deserved. It was satisfying. It was kind of weird seeing all members of the family with sticks and beating Murphy into oblivion. Some of them were just not even brutal, you know, hits. It was just kind of like tapping him. I think some of the and I don't know if the women were just not, you know, obviously they're not as strong as their male counterparts. However, I don't know if they felt like they needed to take it easy on Murphy, but some of the hits were just kind of like childish. I mean, I understand the visual. They beat down Murphy into a pulp. No Seth Rollins. I'm very surprised. I thought it was going to be a setup for Seth Rollins to come back as a street fight. Since Murphy had no backup, you would assume his backup would be like kind of hiding in the shadows. And instead we got nothing. Nothing. For Murphy. No backup, no help. And it goes off the air with everyone getting their shots in on Murphy. So that was satisfying. I know that people are tired of the Mysterio and Rollins program. It has gone much longer than I think even WWE saw coming. But it had legs. It had a good story. I'm ready for it to be over, though. I'm getting to that point of like, okay, let's do this. My fear is that they continue it to Hell in a Cell, which means we have another month of this. Minimum. 2 months. Because they'd have to go to Clash, and then you'd have to go to Hell in a Cell in October. So, I have a feeling that it probably will be strung out that long, only because this program is deserving of the Cell. This one-on-one with Rey Mysterio and Seth of a finale blow-off match, this is where the Cell comes into play. This is where the Devil's Playground, as they call it in WWE, this is where the Cell comes in handy. Not just because it's built into the schedule of pay-per-views, but because it's deserving, this is where you go. And I have a feeling that they may string it out that long. It could end at Clash of Champions, but I think that the story going into Hell in a Cell would be a pretty good story. A pretty good story. And maybe they just kind of do promos instead of having them in ring every, you know, week or so. And I don't know. So, okay. So the next thing I have here, it's kind of twofold. Andrade and Angel Garza were in a match with the Street Profits. And we had Angel Garza bail on Andrade. Zelina Vega's like, what the hell's going on? This is a team. What are you doing this for? And Angel Garza goes up the ramp and basically leaves Andrade high and dry. So we have Andrade high and dry, loses the match. And then, well, let me address that first. Angel Garza and Andrade have never been a team that has held together since their inception. I never understood why they never gave this team a chance. Never. They've had issues since day one. Are we really supposed to care? We have no emotional investment in a team that hasn't even got off the ground. So, I don't understand this at all. I don't know what their issues have been since day one, where they they work well, they have issues, they work well, they have issues, more issues, issues, issues. And I think this is it. This has to be it for Angel Garza and for Andrade, which is kind of sad because the tag team division on both brands as an industry is not that deep, which is why I'm also really questioning why the Iconics were broken up. Made no sense. And why they faced each other this week. Why? Yeah, I don't get it. Are they just to kind of send the message to fans of which one they view as the more prominent one, as the dominant one, as the one that they're going to push, probably, with Peyton Royce getting the clean victory? Made sense. Maybe they had a match because of what Peyton Royce did to Billie Kay, throwing her in the ring at the Raw Underground last week. Maybe that's what it was. I'm not sure. But having another tag team bite the dust is really a head-scratcher considering, again, the depth of the tag team divisions on both brands. And again, shows you, and you can look at the record of WWE booking over the last 20, 30 years, that tag team wrestling has never, ever been Vince McMahon's focus. Never. Because he believes that single stars are really where the money's at, and that's where the draw is. And to some degree, he's true. Because tag teams are really developed so that you can create, in most cases, not all, create big single stars. But you have to get those tag teams over first. So, I don't know. I'm going on down a rabbit hole with myself. So, we got that with Angel Garza and Andrade. Angel Garza's gone. I assume this team is totally split, totally dead. I hope. Because I'm tired of the teasing me about something that I don't really care about. And then we inexplicably get a visit from the SmackDown tag team champions of Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. Look, I love these two. I think their chemistry is good. Cesaro is, he's getting more mic time than he ever has. He's still a little awkward on the mic. He didn't have a great comeback to the joke about him having a ton of tag team partners. He just said, oh, you got jokes. Okay, he could have at least said, the only joke around here are you two. I mean, very basic comeback, and he just had nothing other than, oh, you got jokes, and then pretended to laugh. I mean, it's like, I know you are, but what am I? Like, come on. Come on, Cesaro. You could have done better than that. But it was just, now I have no problem with these two facing one another next week on Raw. It's a hook. You wanted to tune in. Football officially starts this week. They no longer have free reign over the football fans that may have tuned in. And the football fans are probably going to tune into football. And that competition is going to hurt their ratings. So they're trying to stack the card for next week. And they're doing it with a champion versus champions match. And they're the reason for, and the biggest thing I have with this, it's the quarter final, the quarterly invitational, the quarterly brand invitational. Is that what they called it? So let me get this straight. We've gone from brand split, nobody goes on the other brand, of which they violated that after like a month on a weekly basis with no explanation. Two, the awful wild card rule that had little to no rules to it. It had, no wait, let me say that again. I believe Vince McMahon said no more than four superstars, of which it was violated, but like the first week they did it. I mean, it was just, it was ridiculous the way it was implemented because it made no sense. And it was just essentially like, you want to have a brand split, but only when it's convenient. That's exactly what that wild card rule is for. That's exactly what it was for. Now you got the wild card rule of the quarterly invitational. And I think even before this, about a month or two ago, they said it was, maybe it was the same verbiage. Maybe it was, I'm just extremely tired right now. And maybe that's not what they called it. But they had something along the lines of only X amount of times per year you can have somebody come over from another brand. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was four times a year, which would make sense since it's quarterly. Okay, maybe I answered my own question. But now it's the quarterly brand invitational. So how does this work? How does the quarterly brand invitational work? Are we just supposed to think, well, quarterly, okay. If it's quarterly, that means that we're in quarter, I don't know what quarter it is to WWE right now. If you're on the calendar year, then it is the, I think we're in the, no, we're in the third quarter right now, the end of the third quarter. If we're at the end of the third quarter of 2020, then that would mean that we can't see somebody else for another 3 months. But how much you want to bet that the quarterly invitational is not adhered to and abided by? I would bet you my house. I really would. I would bet you my house that WWE doesn't stick to this. I don't know why they even have a brand split at this point. Why bother? Why bother? And why is brand loyalty such a thing? Just wait. Don't worry. Survivor Series is coming up, folks, and you will have the most heated rivalries simply because of the color of your brand. That's coming. That's coming. Put all rivalries aside. You got kicked in the skull by Randy Orton and he attacked your family. Guys, listen, take a breath. The brand is more important. Well, why? Well, it just is. Well, what do we win? Supremacy. What does that mean? Well, we can say we have the superior brand. We have bragging rights. That's how the conversation would go. So I'm already beating down Survivor Series and we've got two pay-per-views to go. So I just cannot stand the Survivor Series format of what it's become based on logic of like, how the hell are fans supposed to care? How do fans care about what brand they like? WWE, whether you put NXT under it, you put hell Evolve under it, you put Raw or SmackDown, fans don't discriminate generally, especially between Raw and SmackDown. Raw and SmackDown fans are pretty interchangeable. If you go to NXT, you may say, I only like NXT and I watch Raw or SmackDown. Fine, there's a little more brand loyalty there. But it's all under the same company. It's all WWE. Oh, God. All right, I'm going off the rails. But this quarterly invitational, look, I'm looking forward to this match. It gives these two teams something new to do. And that is face one another. What's on the line? Again, nothing other than just, it's tag team champions versus tag team champions. And I'm also glad that Shinsuke and Cesaro called out the antics that the Street Profits have been doing over the last several months of baseball and bowling and golf or whatever nonsense they've been doing that really hurt not just the show, but the team and the belt itself. It was just bad business all around. And I love how they called that out on air. That was awesome. That I'm very surprised that they allowed that to be on there, but I thought it was good stuff. All right, moving on to something else that just... I don't understand how championship matches are awarded in WWE. Does anybody have a tried and true formula beyond the attack a champion formula, which is it's a certainty. It's not even a maybe. I'm serious. I would bet you, I don't know how the hell you'd get this statistic, almost impossible to dig up, but any championship match that in which a championship match started with somebody attacking the champion, I would love to know that percentage of which that person got awarded a championship match. Like, so for example, I'm Joe Schmo. I walk in the door in WWE. I'm brand new. I attack, say Braun, or not Braun Strowman. I attack Roman Reigns. I attack Sami Zayn and or Jeff Hardy, which I love Sami Zayn that he's back. So happy he's back, by the way. I haven't really had a chance to talk about that. Love it. But I attack one of those guys. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to pull me off of them. They're going to go, what the hell? And then I'm going to get a championship match. That, I would almost guarantee it. It's just such crazy logic how championship matches are awarded. Why am I asking this? Because my question to you guys is, how the hell did Mickey James earn a women's championship opportunity? How did that happen? How did Mickey James, a person that was used as a pawn against Natalya a couple of weeks ago, just to be disrespected by Seth Rollins going in the face of Samoa Joe on commentary to look for where's Rey Mysterio. That match was a joke. She was used as a pawn and background noise to getting a women's championship opportunity next week on Raw against Asuka. Why? What is going on? Would somebody please explain to me how a championship match is awarded to Mickie James outside of her tenure? Okay, tenure doesn't get you what you want all the time. Tenure does not automatically gift you anything other than maybe respect. But Mickie James, who hasn't won a match, like really, when's the last time Mickie James won a match? Yeah, I don't know either. So the fact that she's awarded a championship match with no explanation, zero, is really a head scratcher. So, I mean, I'm tuning in and I'm happy for her, but does anybody in this world think that Mickie James is going to win the women's championship? Yeah, the answer is very obvious there. Very. So, I don't get it. Explain to us how this happened. Was Asuka just in a good mood and she said, yeah, let's do it. And then the WWE officials were like, okay, let's make it official. How did this happen? No explanation. They still haven't given one for how Braun Strowman just filled in for Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. That still has not been addressed, and maybe it will be eventually. Although, I'm thinking with Paul Heyman at the helm and the special counsel to the tribal chief, that's the verbiage now that we're going with, instead of the advocate language when he was with Brock Lesnar. He's now the special counsel to the tribal leader, really playing on Roman Reigns' Samoan heritage. And that's fine. That's fine. That's a whole other topic. And SmackDown, I'm actually really liking a lot more than Raw lately. But I don't get it. I don't get it. And if this is a simulated sport in which we're supposed to care about the championships, and it's simulated in the way that you're following how people are earning championship opportunities, this would be all over the map. Like, there is no clear-cut way to earn a championship match other than attack the champion, which is somehow just a guaranteed, surefire way to get your shot at the belt. That's all you have to do. So that moves us on to the handicap matches. Handicap matches used to be a thing where handicap matches were only, they were done rarely, and it felt important. And it felt like, oh my God, how is this person going to overcome the odds? Very, very, I remember a time, even in the 90s, that it was not often done. And this time we got two of them against the same two people. So Shayna Baszler was up first against the Riot Squad of Ruby Riot and Liv Morgan. And Ruby Riot, look, I will say Ruby Riot looks healthier. I think most of us agree that she looks a lot better in terms of just her health. She looks like she put on weight. She just looks healthier. There's no other way to put it. And I was worried because I said to myself, oh my God, here we go. Shayna Baszler is going to plow through these two. They are pawns. All this build that they've done for these two over the last several months is going to go straight down the drain, and they're used as foundation blocks for Shayna Baszler. I mean, remember what she did in the Elimination Chamber with Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan there? Steamrolled them. Natalya was in that one too. Steamrolled. And now we have Shayna Baszler lose. I'm okay with that because I think the alternative of having Shayna Baszler plow through these two would have been worse than having Shayna Baszler lose to these two. And it was done in a way of, what was it? You guessed it, the dreaded roll-up. The most devastating finisher of all time. The roll-up, fine. That's fine. Or sunset flip, I think, of some sort. So, fine. Shayna Baszler loses. It's just really a striking difference from where she was at the Elimination Chamber. Completely different vibe. I know she's in a tag team now. But she took out five other women. And two of which were in the handicap match. But I guess we're all supposed to forget that because we don't have memories as wrestling fans, as Vince would like to believe. Then we get Nia Jax, who was on her way to losing after she was laughing at Shayna Baszler. And we get interrupted by none other than Retribution. Retribution finally speaks. And it looks like we have some defined members. It looks like we have some defined members of the group, which is great because they kind of have gone from having a defined group to not having a defined group. And that was nice to see. So what did Retribution have to say? They didn't say a whole lot other than they're here for exactly what we thought they were here for, except they phrased it as the locusts of contempt. And they're going to feed on the superstars and fans. Right? I mean, they're here because they were cast aside. So the voice altering makes sense. Some people have already identified who they are, even through the voice altering. I'm not going to spoil anything. So I'm glad they, again, gave him something to speak about. Gave him a voice. That was good. They gave them a voice. They gave him some kind of, again, very scripted, very, very scripted. But they gave him something, a mission statement as Corey Graves, as Michael Cole called it and Samoa Joe called it. That is something that was desperately needed. I mean, I was actually starting to kind of dread seeing them because it was just the same old nonsense with no direction, just like kind of senseless nonsense or senseless violence. There's no direction, just, okay, they're here to destroy stuff. Can we get something from them, please? We finally did. I'm surprised it took them this long to speak. Maybe WWE didn't have a plan for them to speak. They just kind of like, let's do some hotshot angle. Let's do something. We'll figure out the details later. It feels like a lot of that was what they did because it took them how long to speak. I think it was Michael Cole who said, you know, over the last month, they've been wreaking havoc. No. It's been longer than a month. I think it's been closer to 2 months that they've just been doing stuff and we're all like, oh, okay, so like, who are you? Are you not going to tell us? So we're just supposed to go, okay, they're here. Look out, everybody. So I'm glad they gave them something. It looks like there's a fine number of people in this group, although that may change next week with 20 showing up. But at least for now, we got what, like 6 backstage. And a kind of an old Shield type of promo where there was kind of grainy and dark. It felt very Shield-like. And so we'll have to see. Kevin Owens and Aleister Black, I'll get it right, fighting each other at Raw Underground. Probably the most interesting thing that happened at Raw Underground. At least Kevin Owens is getting a little bit of retribution. No pun intended. And he's not just getting kicked in the face now every week and getting black-masked. And this should end up in a match at Clash of Champions with Kevin Owens against Aleister Black. Be very interested to see who goes over in that match. Be very interested to see, because Kevin Owens has been kind of on the descent for a while, brought back, and now he had a big win over Seth Rollins at WrestleMania and obviously was injured, comes back, plays a little bit more Seth Rollins, but goes nowhere, does some Kevin Owens shows. I think it was one with Riot Squad, where Retribution did their whole light trick and then now gets black masked twice. And hopefully he's in some kind of relevant program. But again, the outcome is very interesting to me because Aleister Black is also on the ascent. They're on very similar paths in a way. So very curious about the outcome of that. I have a feeling Aleister Black will probably go over. But we will have to see about that as well. So one last thing I'll say about Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre as I'm thinking about it. So much to unpack on this with Drew and Randy. Did I really want to see Randy Orton get leveled three times? I was kind of enjoying the heat build for Randy Orton. I was loving that he was undefeated, undefeated inside the ring, I should say. For a long period of time, he was consistently punting people in the skull, building heat. And then Keith Lee cooled it off big time at Payback with the pin. Yeah, it was a backslide pin. It was a spirit bomb pin. It was a real win. And also Drew McIntyre beating him with the backslide. I believe that's where that happened. So any losses that Randy Orton has accrued, I'm not a fan of, because I want it to build. I'm a patient wrestling fan for how good the heat build has been. I love being able to finally blow it off and get so much satisfaction out of seeing Randy Orton get beaten to a bloody pulp. And that's what he needs to get done. That's what needs to happen. I've said it again, and I will say it again. I said it before, I'll say it again. That's the phrase. See, I'm super tired, guys. But I'm here for you. I'm here for my own therapy on this. Randy Orton needs to be pummeled. He needs to be beaten where officials come out and people keep beating him. And it's really like TV 14 bad. It needs to be like that because of how much heat he's built. But it's gotten blown off now with Keith Lee beating him, with Drew McIntyre beating him, with Drew McIntyre now doing three Claymore kicks, although not pinning him, still getting three Claymore kicks in. It's starting to cool Randy off a bit from how white hot he was. So we need Edge back, and we need Edge back fast. If Randy Orton's going to continue to take these hits for the satisfaction of the audience, not worth it. Not worth it, I don't think. But I understand that Drew is great as a champion, but I still would have put the belt on Orton the first chance they met. I really would have. But that is your Raw review, guys. I think I covered most of everything. Peyton Royce and Billy Kay, I said I already talked about that. But if you'd like to get your voicemail in, 518-952-0247. That's 518-952-0247. It's an unmanned number. I won't answer. I always try to make sure people know that. It's not going to be weird, right? This isn't a personal number. I don't get notified until the voicemail gets actually put in the system. But you can call. Leave a minute, two-minute message, questions, rants, whatever you want. Keep it PG about any topic wrestling related, and I'll get you on the show. You can also email me your voicemail or just email me questions at realwwepodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram at @WWE_podcast. Many of you take advantage of that. I'm also going to be starting soon. I do not have a date. A couple things. Number one, I'm going to be revisiting the Botch Guys podcast, which, by the way, check out his YouTube channel. Awesome channel. He's so quick with getting content up and relevant content up. And he's got a great personality, very magnetic, high energy. And it's just a great channel. So check him out. I'm going to be collaborating with him again in the near future. And also starting a little bit of video of my own on YouTube. And what I mean by that is this. Again, no start date has been set for this. But what my thought is going to do a very short video format where I talk about a single topic in just a minute or two. Where I kind of give you some hotshot takes on things. Not to just create clicks or views, but what I actually believe. So that's going to be something that's coming along the line. It won't be very super edited. It'll just kind of be maybe raw content and certain things that are going on. I don't want to create, again, my first thought was, hey, let's do a 30 or 40 or 50, 60 minute video version of this where you're hearing me talk now. But that's not exactly interesting. How many people are going to watch this for 60 minutes and I'm just doing the same thing you could do and you could listen to me on audio? It's not that interesting. So I think it's going to be different content, but much, much, much shorter. Minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops on certain things. So let me know what you guys think. It's just a thought. All right. Well, again, hit me up at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Go to the website at wwepodcast.com. And please leave us a rating and review anywhere that you can. It really does help the show out a lot, a lot, a lot. You can also get an ad-free version of this show if you're like, oh my God, the ads. Go to WWEpodcast.com on Patreon. We are there as well. $1 a month gets the entire library ad-free. So how about that? Alrighty. Well, guys, I think things have come to an end. But tomorrow I'll be back with Wrestling Nostalgia. I don't know the topic yet, but I have a couple in mind. Until then, I'll talk to you soon. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.